This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Elliott Shore Parks is brought to us by Colonial Hyundai. Shop online 24/7 at colonialhyundai.com. Colonial Hyundai, the fast, easier, better way to buy a Hyundai. Good morning, Elliott.
What's up? How you guys doing this morning?
Quite a bit, awesome. My man. We got a lot happening here. The Hurts thing has come back again.
Yes.
Round. And look, this time it is accompanied by a big and strong defense from Nick Sirianni of his quarterback. Give us your understanding of the setting in which Sirianni said this. And Nick doesn't usually go to the curse form of presenting himself with a curse publicly. So he went into that bag of tricks. What do you make of what Sirianni said and how he framed it?
Yeah, he's always, I think, been pretty defensive of Jalen. If you remember last year, I think it was after the win over Baltimore on the road, where Jalen didn't put up a ton of stats, but I thought played very well. Nick said something similar. I think he actually used the same exact word when defending Jalen. So, you know, during my time covering Nick, I think one thing that's very true about him is he very, very, very much values the relationship with his players. And I think he does believe Jalen is a very good quarterback. But I also think he knows that while Jalen might not ever admit it, it does bother Jalen that he gets consistently ranked lower on this list and where his resume might, you know, think that he should be. And I think Nick knows standing up for Jalen is good for their relationship. When Nick speaks firmly and strongly about, you know, this criticism, he knows that Jalen's going to hear that. So I do think Nick believes it, but I also think he knows the benefits of sticking up for his quarterback publicly.
So tell me if you agree with this comment, Elliott. This is the way I view sort of this Hurts thing from a national standpoint. Because when I see 70 NFL people, like actual people in the NFL, call him ninth, I think that's ridiculous. I'd put him fifth. I don't go as high as two. I put him five. But here's where I think a lot of it comes from. There are people in the NFL who were brought up to believe it's the traditional pocket quarterback thing. And while a lot of coaches and teams have evolved to run their offenses differently, some people don't think differently. And that leads to Hurts being ranked ninth instead of fifth. Like, the tush-push is a factor. Like, he can do it, Herbert can't. Now, he's got great offensive linemen, but he's great at it. And he should get points for that. And I think people miss that. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, so I think that's definitely part of it. I think the reason, or it's twofold. One, I do think because of the uniqueness of this list, right, where it is head coaches, GMs, executives, I think we all need to accept that this is just where Jalen is viewed around the league. This isn't about they don't like Jalen. This isn't about they're not getting. This is just how they view him. If there was a draft of every quarterback in the NFL, Justin Herbert would go ahead of Jalen. Now, we can feel that's wrong. We can think that that's not giving Jalen the credit for what he's deserved. I'm just saying that list accurately depicts, I believe, how Jalen is viewed around the league. Now, why is it that way? I think it's the same exact reason when we talk about Nick, when we talk about, you know, Jalen. It's the talent on the roster. They are consistently dinged for the talent on the roster. If you look at Justin Herbert in LA, people will look at that and go, he does not have the talent Jalen has. Now, here in Philadelphia, we know that Jalen has been a big part of this roster becoming so talented. I think it's a misconception that when Jalen came into the Eagles, he walked into a great situation. He did not. He was drafted to be a backup with Carson Wentz here and almost no talent on the roster. In 2021, it was not a great situation for a quarterback to be in. Now, is he the reason the roster's improved? No, of course not. Howie has a big part of that. Nick has a big part of it. But AJ had a relationship with Jalen. Devontae had a relationship with Jalen. So, yes, it's a better situation, but Jalen is a part of the reason it's such a good situation.
Does the roster need to stink for everyone to eventually value Jalen? When does the underappreciation end?
So I think, it sounds extreme, but I think you're probably correct. If Jalen were to go on a 7 or 8 game streak without AJ, without Devontae, maybe without Saquon, obviously that's not something he wants to have happen. That's not something the team wants to have happen. But if the objective is just to get him higher on these lists, then yes, I do think if he was productive without those players around him, it would help him, but that would not be good for the Eagles. So ultimately, if at this time next year, how are we viewing this where Jalen is second or Jalen is top five? I think he's got to win the Super Bowl again. Like, if he wins another Super Bowl, I don't see how the executives around the league, the coaches, the GMs, still have him ninth. But again, I do believe this is where he is viewed around the league. Not where I have him, but I think that we all need to accept Jalen is still viewed around the league lower than the guys that he is lower than on this list.
And where do you have him?
So I think Jalen belongs either 2 or 5, and it depends on how you're making
the list. What?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It depends on how
you're... Not 3 or 4.
He's riding the fence, and then I don't know what that's called.
Two or five.
Well, hold on, I think he's 1 or 20.
2 or 5.
No.
I think the Sixers are either going to make the playoffs next year or they're not.
No. Well, the Sixers aren't going to make the playoffs, but I would put him 2. On my list, I have him 2, but I think the fair places to put him are either 2 or 5, and it depends how you're doing it. If you want to value the Super Bowl and the fact that he has one and the other three quarterbacks don't, then he should be 2. And if you want to do it off of just pure talent, he's 5.
Yeah, but then you can include Stafford and others, Sean.
I do include Stafford. Stafford has won a Super Bowl. I value that. I think that boosts Matthew Stafford's value in this list.
So here's one of my arguments against that lean, Elliot. I mean, a guy like
how can you not
Eli,
have that lean?
Like Jim
it's
Plunkett.
It's the most important
Jim Plunkett
game of the season.
I never heard anyone call Jim Plunkett a top 5 quarterback in football. Guy went 2.
He played. Yeah, but he played like a top 5 quarterback in those postseasons and those Super Bowls.
I understand you can have a run. Like Foles was never a top 5. I mean, he was
right,
maybe
but
other
the difference.
Maybe other
than Tom Brady,
maybe other than 2013, he was never a top 10. Right?
Yeah. I just think the difference is with Eli Manning, he consistently was like a 500 quarterback in his career. Jalen, we point to the Super Bowl, but even if you remove the Super Bowl win, Jalen's resume is pretty impressive. In fact, I would bet if you include the Super Bowl, there are not many people at 26 years old that had the football resume Jalen has from high school to college to the NFL.
There's
probably not been many. So you are right that Eli Manning was probably never a top 5 quarterback. But the difference is Jalen wins about 80% of his games consistently, and that has to matter.
Elliot with us right now. It's 94 WIP HD1 Philadelphia as we broadcast today. All-Star game coming up later tonight. We'll talk more about that as we move forward. From the Tasty Cake studio today. So, Elliot, you know Jalen better than we do. You have access as a beat reporter to the scene down there with great frequency. I'm curious your answer to this question. How much do you think the negative comments bother Jalen? From afar, I sense it probably bothers him a lot. He doesn't let on to it publicly. I know it would bother me. How much do you think it bothers him?
I definitely think it bothers him. I think he is very good at publicly putting on a face of he doesn't care. He doesn't often cause any controversy at the podium. But I think privately, he definitely is aware of what everyone says. I just don't think you can be someone that is so obsessed with greatness and is so obsessed with being viewed as one of the best of all time and then not care about how you're viewed currently.
Don't you think he cares more about how his teammates view him and how his coaches view him than how some ESPN poll views him?
I guess, but I do think that the public narrative around him is something that bothers him, and I do think it's something that should bother him. I mean, he probably thought...
I think it should, too. And I think it motivates him.
Yeah, I think it motivates him. He probably thought, if I win the Super Bowl, that's when I'll get my credit, right? And he has to an extent. Yeah. Let's be clear. I mean, I think on this list, he was unranked last year. So the fact that he's moved up into the top 10 is giving him credit. But no, definitely, from being around Jalen since he's been drafted.
He was unranked, Elliot, last year on this same list?
Remember,
yeah,
John, you got to remember, at the end of 2023,
it was
a disaster.
Yeah.
Think about that concept. I mean, if that's what we're talking about here, like, I remember how bad
he was at the end. I mean, he took a safety in a playoff game from the 12-yard line. That's hard to do.
I get it, but that was awful. You have to factor, but you have to factor in the fact that the same people who last year did not include him on this list.
I
think that says a lot. I didn't know that information last year. He wasn't even on this list.
But let's dip back even more in the Jalen story, because I think this one
goes. How is that possible?
Well, again, he was horrible at the end of 23. I think this one goes under discussed, I'll say, Ellie, because we talk an awful lot about the transfer from Alabama to Oklahoma and the benching in Alabama. But here's one that, if I would guess, probably sticks in his craw. The accomplishments in college football, which included a Heisman Trophy finalist, Right? Didn't he finish second for the Heisman? Remember?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Finished second for the Heisman Trophy, second round draft pick. Now, there's a lot of Heisman Trophy winners that have been bad NFL, and normally it's quarterback.
Tons.
You know, yeah. Gino Toretta's of the world, they win the Heisman, and they did have a great team around them, and they're not great in the pros. And there's been plenty. I think Danny Warfel, I think, was one of them. So
Johnny Manziel, is he one?
Well, he didn't win the Heisman.
He never won the Heisman?
No. But the quarterback position, especially on an Alabama or old school Miami, it can lend itself to, like, you win 12, 13 games, you win a national title, you stink in the pros. But I'll say this, Elliot. He was probably cheesed to go in the second round. And let's be real. He should have been a first-round pick. I mean, given what he's put out there, obviously the league misidentified him coming out of college.
Yeah, I would agree. And not only that, he was drafted to be a backup. His own team essentially said when they drafted him, we view you as a backup quarterback. So I think that's part of it. But draft stock does play a huge part. You brought up Nick Foles. Nick Foles, if he was a first-round pick, he probably gets more chances to be the Eagles starting quarterback than he ever actually got. But because Carson Wentz was a first round pick, he gets the team back after they win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
With Jalen had to earn his right to be the starting quarterback. He was never the plan for him to be the starting quarterback. In fact, they kind of lucked into it a little bit, but he had to earn that because of his draft stock. And one thing that's very true, I think in all sports, but definitely in the NFL, where you're drafted impacts your opportunity and how you're viewed a long time after your draft.
I'll give you an example that I agree with you 1,000,000%, Elliot, and Seth Joyner and I have talked about this, I think both on and off the air. The fact that Seth was drafted, I think it was in the eighth or ninth, something like that.
It was later than that. It was a number that I couldn't believe was so high.
It's a number that no longer exists because they only do seven rounds now. Seth and I both believe is a factor in why he hasn't made the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, for instance, it took an extra couple years for people to even, like, essentially realize he existed on the national level. So you missed a couple Pro Bowls you could have gotten. Here we are 30, 40 years later. You don't have those early Pro Bowls. And it's like, I guess he wasn't that good. He's not a Hall of Famer. And, I mean, to me, that's nonsense because I thought Seth was a flat-out Hall of Fame football player.
Well,
but how it starts sets in motion a lot of things.
If Jalen was a first-round pick, I think we'd be discussing him, and nationally he'd be discussed, as a potential Hall of Fame player based off his resume alone. I think how he would be viewed. And I'm pretty sure all the other nine quarterbacks on that list were all first-round picks, right?
Yes.
Wow.
So he's the only one that wasn't there.
Interesting. All right, Ellie, a couple other things I want to get to here with you. One of which, and this one bothers me, and I can't say it's the end of the world, and I can't say no one can prove anything with it, but it bothers me, and I think it stinks. That the ring ceremony is, what is it, like 2 days before training camp starts?
Yeah.
So Ray made a point. Matter of fact, I want to play this audio of Ray. Let's listen to the ditty last week because I asked Ray about the timing of the ring ceremony. He flipped it around and views it differently than I did. Here's something Ray said.
Do you find it annoying and or a little potentially problematic that the ring ceremony, because the rings were delayed coming in, is not until I think it's 2 or 3 days before training camp? Which is something a team normally gets out of the way way, way before training camp. Is that irritating, and is that potentially a little clunky?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, you get the ring when you get the ring. I don't think there's any prescribed right time or ideal time to do it.
All right, so, Elliot, I've made a point in my life to not disagree with Ray, except when I know I'm right.
You did it three times on Friday. I was listening.
Right. All right, so, Elliot, I mean, I feel really confident the right time to do it is not 2 days before the start of training camp.
Oh, come on.
What say you, Elliot?
Yeah, I don't think they would have picked this. In fact, they didn't pick it, right? They did not initially want to do it in this time. Now, I think the biggest thing with this is it's just a buzzkill for the party itself, because you know all night on Friday when they're getting these rings, it's going to be, hey, we got it on Monday. We start back up on Monday. Here we go. Whereas had they done it 6 weeks ago, then maybe they could truly let themselves enjoy it. But as to whether it can be a distraction, if this is a distraction, then we got a 2023 season coming our way. Like, this will be the first test, right? Of this is going to be all year. Maybe the ring ceremony is on Friday, but they're going to be living through a ring ceremony all year. The banner coming down on week one, all the primetime games. So this will be a good first test. But yeah, no question, they would not have wanted to do it the Friday before training.
Elliot, what do you know about CJGJ? Like the Sweats and the Milton Williams, and I hope they're all there. But like, they didn't say after leaving things CJGJ said. Do we know his status for Friday?
So I don't know his status. I would be surprised if he came just because of what's happened. Well, and also, I mean, he's in Houston now. I think that's one thing with this too. Do these players want to travel to Philadelphia? I know, you know, traveling's not the end of the world for them, but it's not convenient for him. So,
well, right before their own training camp.
The other camps are starting a little bit later we are earlier with our Thursday night game. So
Chargers
they would
start
have a little
today,
more time.
Though, right? Don't they?
They're rookies reported today.
Oh, the rookies. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I find it, like, I'm not saying it's the end of the world, but I just know after the 2018 experience, I just, this is not what I'd want. I mean, I know Doug had a book in July or August of 2018. I thought that felt misplaced. Like, to me, a ring ceremony to celebrate last year. And look, I know in the NBA they do the banner night, the first night of the next season. Like,
This is what happens with these rings. I received my ring from the Raiders.
This has never happened before.
I can tell you, this is what happens with these rings, the Super Bowl rings, that conference championship rings. When they get done, it's usually just right before the season. You got to make the order, and it gets bloated, and it takes forever. Everyone's waiting. Mine was delivered at training camp when I was an Eagle.
It's because you didn't play for the Raiders anymore.
I know, but the rings weren't available until we were in training camp. Wow. Like, this is just the way the schedule works out. They're making the best of it. It was delayed a little bit. I'm sure that, that's not ideal.
I don't like it.
They can handle this.
When should they get World Series rings?
What do you want them to do?
The first day of the season.
Yeah, but it's not a big deal.
But it's not a big party. To give them the rings from last season because they were delayed a little bit.
Plus, that's the day you boo Adam Eaton. That's what you do. Adam Eaton.
We celebrate that every year around here.
All right, Elliot, one last thing. Give us a totally different storyline related to next week and the start of training camp that we haven't discussed.
I mean, after 5 months of talking about this team nonstop every day, it's hard to think of one we haven't discussed. But all right,
I meant in the last freaking 15 minutes, all right?
Yeah, okay. Well, one thing I do think I would keep an eye on is Jahan Dotson this year. I think that the depth chart at the Eagles receiver is obviously thin behind the starting two. Jahan Dotson, I thought, had an awesome offseason when I saw him. I think he looks way more comfortable. He got traded right at the beginning of the season last year. And with AJ and the knee issues he had last year, Devontae's always been really healthy. If they miss time, they're going to need guys to step up. And I feel more confident in Jahan Dotson doing that this year than I think
we
I did
forget
last
about
year.
The huge catch he had in the Super Bowl. I mean, that was
and the Green Bay touchdown.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah, the Green Bay. Yeah.
He finished strong. Yeah. Elliot, last thing. Tell me if you agree with this blueprint. Joe versus Jack. Hammer wins tennis. Jack wins running. Hammer wins basketball. Hammer wins overall 3-2, right?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. Unfortunately, I think baseball.
Is that supposed to be funny?
No.
Baseball is your last
chance. Is that really what you imagine?
I don't imagine it. It's what I think is going to happen.
I think you could win tennis. Baseball.
Could win tennis. Come on, man.
Going to win tennis.
So you're saying he's going
to. Why do you think you.
Because I'm better than him.
Joe, you have to run to play tennis.
Hey, it's a little side.
How do you get to the ball if you don't run?
I did my Jimmy Connors slide. A little slide action.
I wouldn't slide if I were you.
I wouldn't run if I were me. So slide's all I got. So Elliot, why are you backing him so hard? I don't care if you think he'll win. I don't care. I mean, 80% of people think he'll win. But why haven't I gotten more? Why haven't I gotten more love from you during this process? What the hell, man?
Well, to be fair, I'm the only person at the station that roots for you and beat the Hammer. So I feel like I've done my job in terms of supporting you. But no, I just think Jack's going to win. I think he's going to win. So I hope you do well. But I don't think you're going to win.
Elliot, this is the part of the conversation where I hang up on you now, okay?
All right. Talk
See you, buddy.
Later.
Hey, good luck with camp coming up. We'll talk to you, Tom. Thanks, Elliot.
Yeah,
thanks,
talk Elliot. To you.
Going on this Tuesday morning, All-Star Game is tonight. We will not see Zach Wheeler, but we will see Kyle Schwarber, a lot of other stars in baseball, and a lot on Jalen Hurts today. As league execs and coaches rank him as the 9th best in pro football these days. All right, Ben Davis, we love... Of course, Fran, having Mr. Ben Davis in studio with us.
Yes, Ben Davis in studio is brought to you by CJ's Tire and Auto. With 18 convenient locations, we keep things moving. CJTire.com.
We do keep things moving. We also keep things honest. And Ben, you know, in the 6 o'clock hour, we touched briefly on why Seltzer is really not that good a producer. Why don't you add to the list?
Good morning, buddy.
Top of the morning to
Top
you.
And all of it to you. Dude, second time I'm seeing you in like 12 hours.
This is great.
This is like right on repeat.
I love it.
Ben
love
and I
it.
So I met Ben Sontag yesterday. Mm-hmm. Big strapping guy. Mm-hmm. He's going to be bigger than, is he already bigger than you?
He's just about there.
He's moving.
In that direction.
He really is. So, Ben, how great was that Darren Dalton Foundation golf outing?
Phenomenal.
Yesterday?
They do, Brett Datto and his staff, they do the best job. I mean, they are just, it's so efficient, and it's just, it's top-notch, and you know it's for an unbelievable cause.
And specific obviously. People, you know, awarded grants yesterday that are going through cancer.
And it brought a tear to my eye.
How about the one guy's little girl? She's,
Betsy?
I think, eight years old. Really, you're going to love this. Eight-year-old Betsy.
Okay.
Her father was given a grant by the Dutch Foundation. Okay. And she was so appreciative and moved by it. She went out and started, I want to say a lemonade stand, but it wasn't.
Hot chocolate.
Oh. Yeah. Did a hot chocolate stand?
That's awesome.
Raised $10,000, donated back to the foundation.
That's unbelievable.
And that also a lot girl. Of hot chocolate.
It is.
Holy
was it Chestnut Hill area?
It was Chestnut Hill.
Yeah,
well, my guess is she got some donors, John, that probably said,
well, you know,
right.
Angelo lives out in that area. Yeah. I'm sure he dropped a lot on hot chocolate
Let me buy this hot chocolate for $1,000. Yeah. Probably happened with a couple people.
Wow.
But a great outing. And obviously been a ton of former Phils out there.
It was awesome. I mean, just the turnout, the support of, you know, the organization, it is top notch. Yeah, and I recommend it, highly recommend it to anyone out there because they do such a great job.
Yeah, it's a good annual event for sure. All right, 215-592-9494. So Ben, one of the things I said earlier, and I'm thinking this will resonate with you, but I'm curious. I have been struck this offseason by what I call the extremes of opinions with Hurst. There are people that say he's second best in football. I do not say that. I think that's an extreme. Like, there were people that said he's better than Saquon when we did our top 10 list, or 11. Like, I thought that was extreme. Then there are people that say, and this is a lot of league executives, 70 of them, that collectively say he's ninth in football. I think that's extreme. I've got him in the 5-7 range at 5, but in the 5-7 range with Stafford and Daniels, what say you?
I think he's in the 4-5 range.
With who? Lamar?
I think he's better than Lamar.
So you got him 4?
Yeah, I got him at 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we. I mean,
so you're with Rhea. Rhea, that's essentially where you are.
Yeah. Yep.
So
yeah,
okay, Ben and Rhea. Are,
he's
and
stepped
John,
up more in bigger spots.
And then Ben, John, you're like a little higher than that.
Yeah, I expect everyone. Look, we're going to base this season. We're going to take this season's performance and rearrange these guys. I do think there's 5 or 6 guys who are all going to be clustered around that top. I do think Jalen. If you have to factor in the postseason,
you do.
And you have to weigh it more heavily. These are games where it's win or you go home. They matter more. He plays the best in those games.
Well, I'm
His
struck, Ben.
Numbers are incredible.
Yeah.
I agree.
Ben, so I think you're moved by that because I know during the regular season you were frustrated like I was.
Yes.
So it sounds to me like you have bumped him up, as you should, based on what he did in January and February.
What he's done in the playoffs has moved the needle for me.
Yeah.
100%.
Me too.
It's 100%.
And it should. That's okay. That's good. And by the way, the other stuff that people complain about, he's young. He's improving.
Right.
He has committed this entire offseason to not falling into the traps that befall the Super Bowl winning quarterbacks and Super Bowl winning teams. I do expect that this quarterback, this list, you got a bunch of guys who haven't done much in the postseason above him. That doesn't make sense. That does not make sense. For my money, Jalen is the best quarterback in the NFL at leading a balanced offense.
Well, he's not because Mahomes would be. I mean, it is. But
he's not.
Mahomes has a balanced
Patrick
offense.
Mahomes is not a running threat. Patrick Mahomes isn't holding
his
your
own,
backside end stationary because he's such a
well,
on
third
down, he's not going to go scramble. Sometimes he can go scramble and use his legs. Jalen does it better, that part.
I got you.
Significantly better than Patrick Mahomes.
So I don't think it's balanced offense. You're saying dual threat, a little bit more dual threat.
Yeah. That's the better way to put it.
That's fair. All right. Let's go to the phones. Anthony, New Jersey. Anthony, good morning.
Hey, what's going on, morning team? How you doing?
Anthony.
Hi, Anthony.
How are you, pal?
I'm doing good, man. I don't know what Jalen done to most people, man.
What else does he need to do, Anthony? Does he need to win 3?
No, the thing is, I think this list is disrespectful. Now, I'm not saying Jalen should be I believe he should be top four. Now they got Jalen Daniels ahead of him. Jalen Daniels is only a small sample size what he showed us. I want to see him do more. Yeah. Justin Herbert, he gave up a 27 lead to Jacksonville in the playoffs. He's 0-2 in the playoffs, 4 turnovers.
It feels like the Justin Herbert thing, that ranking is preemptive. People expect the second year with Jim Harbaugh at the helm as the head coach out there in L.A., I guess it's now.
I think it's about strong arm,
step
John.
Up. Well, we know he's got a bazooka. Yeah. But people think they're going to finally find their stride this year offensively and incorporate a lot more passing. We'll see the arm. We'll see how good he is this year. But then we still haven't seen him perform at a high level.
He hasn't put it together is the best way I'd put it. He hasn't put it together.
That's fine. And just like Joe said, he hasn't put it together. Show me his body of work that he has done. Not what they think that he's going to do. Right. Lamar Jackson, like a real point. He's awful in the playoffs. Oh, my God. If you take away the 10 other players on the Eagles, put a block over everybody and just focus in, zero in on Jalen, he has them, like Hugh Douglas say, them unqualified intangibles that he just has, and he's going to get it done, and we's going to win. No matter, it's not going to look pretty. It's not going to look good. You don't have to throw for this many yards or this many whatever. Jalen step up in big moments and make big plays. I don't understand what the outside world, even some of our own Eagles fans, don't see or I don't know what else they need to see in Jalen.
Right.
All right, Anthony, give me an answer, buddy. What is both good and bad, like Twitter, on this, the 19th anniversary of that Twitter thing?
Ed from Phoenixville stole my answer with the alcohol, man. Mm. So I'm gonna go women.
Ooh, man.
You're welcome.
Women. Anyone want to? Any of the guys want to touch that?
That's a valid point.
I don't know that.
All right, Ben, give me the negatives.
Meg's still sleeping?
Meg is still sleeping.
Negative.
He Ben, has thoughts.
Ben, I didn't pull back my question. It's still out there.
It's a good time to plead the fifth.
Go Rafael Palmeiro. Or was it McGuire? Who took the fifth? McGuire?
It was Bob Palmeiro. Palmeiro. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, women and alcohol.
Never taken steroids.
So far out of the gate, our answers are alcohol and women. Not bad. 215-592-9494.
Just need a female to call up with the opposite. Thank you very much.
That's right. Coming up, what the Diddy said to us last week about Jalen Hurts, his assessment of Jalen. We'll get to that. Ben's assessment of the Phillies' first-round draft pick. They made that selection, a college kid who obviously Ben has seen pitch. We'll get to that because he could maybe join the Phillies big league club this year. We'll get to that. Elliot Short Parks at 7:50 joins us on Hurts and the Sixers and more. We got a lot happening today. And we ask you to finish this sentence. The 2025 Phillies are what? Let us know. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on 94 WIP.
It is a Fransky Friday in the Midday Show, sponsored by Morgan and Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, as the Phillies get set for the second half of the season. Back in action tonight against the Los Angeles Angels. Scott Fransky joins us right now. Scott, how you doing today?
I could not be better. How are you guys?
Scott, we're doing great and excited to talk to you and excited for the Phils to be back second half of the season. Scott, as you look forward here, obviously the trade deadline is the big thing now on everyone's mind with the All-Star break out of the way and the draft out of the way. Scott, if you had a guess, do you think the Phillies are going to be very aggressive at the trade deadline or more, hey, they're going to try to patch some holes? Because the last couple years, it's felt more like they're patching holes than super aggressive to go get a difference-making player. If you had a guess, how would you guess maybe their mindset is this time?
I would guess that their mindset is to be very aggressive. Does that mean they'll make a bunch of deals that everybody loves? No, because the universe of available players is not maybe what it was in some other years. A lot of teams still think they're in it. A lot of teams might hold on to players. I think they're going to try to be really aggressive, but that doesn't mean they're going to hit on everything. But yes, I think they're going to try to make some big moves if they can do it.
So I agree. I do think they will try to be aggressive. But to your point, exactly, you can't just pick and choose from every roster, right? There's only so many available deals out there.
Right.
I know we agree there's multiple holes they could fill. But just from your point of view, if they could add an impact player either in the lineup or the bullpen, which way do you think they would steer?
I think they'll try both.
Right. So no, agreed. Yeah.
Put that out there. They try both. I don't think they look at it as an either or situation. They're trying to do and, right? This mm-hmm. and that. Now maybe one gets done and the other doesn't get to the finish line, and that's what you end up with. For my money, if you could only make one deal, I would go get a lockdown reliever. Mm-hmm. I just think it's going to be, you're going to have great starting pitching. And you're going to have great starting pitching to get you to the playoffs, but I think you need a lockdown reliever to use in the biggest moments of the game, and it might only be once in a big moment in a game two situation kind of thing, right?
Right.
Because you're going to lean on your starters, but I just need I need a bullpen guy that's going to lock it down. That's for me. Plus, I think. You at least have the potential that, Harper goes off or Schwarber goes off or Turner goes off, right? I mean, these guys could go off, right? And they could be that impact that you're looking for in a short series or whatever. But I just think I don't see anybody fitting that bill right now in the bullpen.
Scott Fransky with us. Start of the second half tonight for the Phillies. The Angels are in town, followed by the Red Sox. Scott, it felt to me like a change towards the end of the first half last weekend with something we see in the lineup or didn't see. Typically for the whole season, when a right-handed pitcher pitches, Max Kepler is in the lineup. And on Sunday against the Padres with Nick Pivetta pitching, he was not in the lineup. We saw Otto Kemp. And I know, they had some other stuff going on. Bohm was out. They moved the lineup around. Schwarber was one. But what did you make of that? Do you think that was a one-off? Or maybe have we reached a tipping point here where it's a sign of things to come?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably more of that to come. I just think you, as an organization, you owe it to yourself. Like, could Otto Kemp do this? I don't know. He's hit a little better against righties than he has against lefties, to be perfectly honest. Could he do this? I don't know if he can. I don't know if he'd be what everybody's hoping for, some corner outfielder that can hit 30 bombs. Obviously he's going to have major defensive limitations. He hasn't had to do a whole lot out there in left, but he's done okay. But we all know where the Philly outfield defense is. And I don't know that you want to actively make it worse. I think they're just trying to find some offense from somewhere. And if it happens to come from Otto Kemp, great. So was it a one-off in a sense? Yes. But I do think they're willing to at least put their toe in the water and see if he can hit righties too.
Scott, there was an interesting story Matt Gelb had at the beginning of the break about the Phillies' approach and how it's worked in the first half versus how it hasn't. And I think we've seen some better things, right? Compared to years past, they've probably chased a little bit less. Trey Turner maybe has made the best switch compared to years past, and he's been more consistently good. But the power is also down. They've gotten to advantageous counts, and they haven't slugged like they used to in those spots. After watching the way the Phillies have hit the first half, do you think it's been a net positive, the change in approach, which is maybe a little bit less go all out to try to hit the ball hard and a little bit more of, hey, let's work better counts, let's put the ball in play, but the power is significantly down from where it's been. What do you make after watching it for a full half?
I don't know on that subject specifically. I got to be honest with you because, if you dig really deep into the numbers, some of them are really strange, right? So, okay, patience, we'll get a pitch to hit, this, that, and the other. Well, as a club, at last check, they were hitting over 400 on the first pitch of an at-bat when they put it in play. They're hitting under 200 when it's a 2-0 count and they put it in play. How does that make sense, right? That flies in the face of that basic strategy. I don't know. Are they scoring more runs? Is that the net? I think everybody wants to see more slug. I think they likely will find more. I mean, I just think Harper alone will provide more of it in the second half. But I just think for me, they just need some more kind of grinded out type at bats as they get through the middle part of the lineup, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8. They just haven't driven in enough runs, those guys. They haven't produced enough when they're men in scoring position. And I don't know what the reason is, really. But they are going to have to find, you know, JT's obviously swung the bat a lot better over the last 3 weeks. There's no question about it. But they've got to have those guys produce some runs because it can't all be on those top three dudes. It just, it won't work like that. Not, you know, over the long haul. It just won't work like that.
So you're obviously closer to the team than a lot of people. And one thing, you know, from my perspective, I was lucky enough, I'm close to the Eagles. And last year, as they got good and it was the midway point of the season, there was a feeling in the locker room of, we have something special and we can do something special in the postseason. I'm curious from your perspective, what's the vibe like in the clubhouse right now? Is it one of, hey, we have one of the better records in baseball, we can go out and do something? Or do you sense maybe more with the outside feels, which is there's a nervousness of maybe this is our last chance together?
You know, it's interesting. I'm not sure if I would use the nervous part of it. I do think there's definitely a sense from these guys that they're unfulfilled, right? They have a mm-hmm. goal. It's still out there. It's been out there for a number of years, right? You know, the same way, you know, you think back to Jalen and thinking about, you know, losing that one Super Bowl and he's coming back. You know he's coming back, right?
Yeah.
And they had that same sort of hunger, I think, and desire. And but I also feel like they feel like they can be better than they've shown this year. And, you know, again, can they? I don't know. Will they? I don't know. They're in first place, which is great, but I still feel like they have the same sense that we all do, that this team could be better than they are, than they have been. And, you know, for all the things that have gone right, here's what you can add up that's gone wrong, and what would that mean? I just think the bullpen itself, I mean, if you look at the games that have either gotten away late or they just, you know, the way these starters have pitched has been so unbelievably dominant. You could easily find five games in there, right, that should have gone the other way. Whether it's a run here or there or a bullpen, you know, an out here or there from the bullpen, and all of a sudden you're talking about a five-game lead. So I do think there's still that desire, that hunger. I think they're still very much the same as they've always been, like a bad loss. It's over. I mean, the next day, these guys just move on. And I think that's a great trait for them because they know how to, you know, get up and do it again the next day and try to win a game the next day.
Scott, Bryson Stott, we've talked a lot about him this year, and they moved him all around the lineup early on when he was doing well. He was the top hitter, he was the leadoff hitter, and then they had to drop him down. And now a lot of conversation has gone on the last week or so is maybe should he just get less playing time? You know, he plays against righties, yeah, not against lefties, but maybe just more Edmundo Sosa just overall at second base. What do you think about the way Stott played in the first half, and do you think the Phillies would maybe think about playing him less if he doesn't pick it up?
Well, I think they would think about it. Again, Edmundo's splits are pretty obvious. I mean, he's definitely a guy who mashes left-handed pitching. And I just think as you go forward, unless something dramatically changes soon for Bryson, I think Edmundo's going to get a lot of starts when there's a lefty on the mound. Now, that's not a lot of games, obviously. It comes and it goes, and, you know, you go through a week and you might see three of them, and then you go for another week and you don't see any. But I think he's definitely going to have to play more against lefties. I assume that's going to happen at second base. But they, you know, Bryson is part of that group that I just talked about in that part of the lineup. He's got to do more. He's got to produce more. They just have to get more out of that because, again, you look at his numbers since April, the end of April, and it's just not getting it done. And he knows it. He knows he should be better and could be better and is trying to get better. And he's hoping to find it. But I do think that's a spot where, you know, again, for sure with a lefty on the mound, Edmundo's got to play more. He just has to.
Yeah, he has. And he seems to do a lot when he does against those lefties. Scott, we appreciate it. Hope the break was great for you. And we're excited to hear you back on the game soon. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, we'll talk soon. There we go. Scott Fransky.
Welcome back. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Brodes and Al Morgani in for the afternoon show. We are live at Chickies and Pete's in South Philly. Whew, the fries just came on the table.
There you go.
Oh,
that's good for you.
Yeah, damn right. I can't wait to devour these. They're the best. The best.
Makes Philly Philly.
That's right. 215-592-9494. It's an on-the-record Friday.
On the record.
Do you believe in the Phillies the rest of the way? So far, we've gotten a lot of, do you want to call it nonsense? Do you want to call it, I don't know the right word or if I can use it on the air, but, I mean, we got people saying we should be putting our bullpen pieces in innings 1 and 2 and then ask Zach Wheeler to go the rest of the way.
You'd think they were in last place.
You would think that. We got Elliot Shore Parks on hold, though. So, again, we can't keep him too long. The Elliot Shore Parks call is brought to you by Robin Ford, online at robinford.com. Robin Ford, where cars and trucks are sold cheap, cheap. All right. Elliot, what's up, dude? What's going on?
Man, if there's any show I'll wait on hold for, it's you and Al. So I'm just happy to listen to you two. But thank you for having me on.
Well, listen, you did 4 hours and decided I'm still going to hang out with the fellas for an extra gotcha. 10. If that doesn't gotcha. Deserve a raise, I don't know what does.
Yeah, let Rod know.
Yeah, hey, I'll talk to the boss. All right, Elliot, let's start here. It's an on-the-record Friday. Do you believe in the Phillies the rest of the way? It's a very simple question, but it's a very, I guess there's a lot of layers to this team, unfortunately. Yeah. Do you believe in the Phillies the rest of the way?
No, I don't. And I think there's plenty of reason not to believe in them. To start, their last few playoff performances. This is not the team that used to be the clutch team that we could trust. We saw them have one of the worst playoff losses of my lifetime when they lost 6-7 at home to the Diamondbacks. We saw how the bats came up small against the Mets last year. So the overarching reason would be I don't trust them come playoff time. But outside of that, I think that when you watch this team night in and night out, and I know people say, well, other teams make mistakes too. That's true. But I watch a Phillies team that consistently makes silly mistakes, whether that's outfield mistakes, whether that's base running mistakes, swinging at bad pitches. They do too many things poorly for me to believe that they're going to put together, you know, 6 weeks of baseball that can win the World Series. So, yeah, 2022 was fun, but that's clearly the outlier with this team. And, no, I don't believe in them the rest of the way.
So would you have the nerve to move two prospects? Do you think it's fixable? Because you seem pretty negative on them. Do you think there is a fix that they can make for this season with what you have in the minors?
So I wouldn't trade any of the top three prospects. I think this era of Phillies baseball is coming to an end. And could they make a surprise run? Sure, anything's possible. But when you're making decisions about long-term pieces with the franchise, I think you have to play the odds. And the odds are this team is not going to win the World Series. So for me to trade a piece, I don't think Painter realistically is getting traded. But let's say Aiden Miller or Justin Crawford. Maybe if I get somebody that gives me one huge inning or, you know, two or three huge innings in the postseason, maybe that makes a difference. But with Schwarber a free agent, with Harper on the decline, with Turner on a bad contract, with Realmuto likely gone, I can't give away pieces for the future. So, no, I would not trade any of the prospects because I don't want to go through another 10 years or whatever it was between making the playoffs. And I think those players are the next era of Phillies baseball.
How do you feel about Bryce? You worried about the wrist? Do you think it's fixable? Can they be good enough if Bryce Harper is solid, if he is strong, but not the Bryce Harper that we know?
I'm concerned about Bryce. He's definitely suffered a ton of injuries over the past few years. It just seems like it takes him a while to get going when he comes back. And when you're constantly coming back from injuries, you're going to spend a lot of the season not playing your best baseball. So the contract to me is a concern. And yeah, I'm not optimistic about Bryce's future. Joe Giglio said a stat yesterday that blew my mind when you consider how he's viewed. He's going to probably end up, assuming he doesn't get red hot the rest of the year, having two of his first 7 seasons with 30-plus home runs. And I think he'll only have played in 1 All-Star game, if I'm not mistaken. So without question, Bedlam at the Bank, one of the best moments of, you know, the past 20 years or whatever in Philly sports. But man, overall, Bryce has been pretty inconsistent over the past few years. And as he gets older, I don't really anticipate that changing.
So, Elliot, you covered a team that we literally saw the light turn on early in the season with the Eagles. It was like,
it looked
dim. Do you not think that, let's just use Harper, he has a big game, a big series. Do you not think there is something there that the electricity can be turned on with this team?
Maybe, but I just don't think they're as talented as the Eagles team. Like, the 2024 Eagles team I covered, definitely, I mean, you guys all know it, like, had their low moments, right? I mean, people wanted Sirianni fired. They played poorly against the Browns. They didn't come out great against the Giants the next week. So there were, and they started 2-2. There were definitely moments where the team wasn't playing well. But I think the difference is we all looked at that team and said they could play better. There is more talent there. With this Phillies team, I'm not really sure that's the case. The starting rotation obviously is elite. And maybe if you put some of those pieces in the bullpen come playoff time, that changes things. But they don't really have any bullpen arms that I really trust. And you can talk yourself into certain guys on certain nights. But for the most part, they don't really have a bullpen piece that you can look at and go, I know that they can get it done come playoff time. And then in the lineup, it's the same thing. There's nights where they put lineups out there, and after the fourth hitter, it just is, you know, nothingness the rest of the way. So I just think that's the main difference. I mean, baseball is unique in the way that you can get hot and it changes things, and this group, to a certain extent, has done that. But the difference with this group, in my opinion, from last year's Eagles is the Eagles were so supremely talented, and I just don't think this team has that level of talent.
This is why I like talking to Elliot instead of Jack Fritz when it comes to baseball, because you just get you just understand the game and you're so knowledgeable. I don't know the answer that you're going to give me here, but are you a Topper guy? Do you like Topper? Do you think Topper's the right fit for this group? And I'm not calling for his job, but I'm just curious. It's a very interesting manager. I like Topper. I think there's flaws, but I like Topper. How do you feel about the manager?
I actually think he's somewhat insignificant. Like, he does have moments where I do think his personality can help with this team, because they are a group of guys that, you know, is certainly not calm, right? And Topper is very calm. But I do think he's also made some critical mistakes in the postseason that has hurt them. So the record speaks for itself, and he's been pretty good. I don't think he swings the pendulum one way or the other, which is maybe not the take you were looking for. But I think it mostly comes down to the hitters are who they are. I don't expect him to be able to get a bunch of guys in their 30s to change how their approach at the plate. And I don't think Dombrowski has really given him a lot to work with in the bullpen. So he's done a decent enough job, but I also don't think he's a special manager that has made them way better than they would be otherwise.
Well, I think he's done a pretty good job, but he is limited in what he has to deal with. But they need, when you look at any team, football, baseball, whatever, there is leadership in a dugout, in a clubhouse, that comes through. I think that's the strength with the Eagles. Their quarterback is their core. But with the Phillies, there are guys there. Like, I think you're minimizing the effect that some of those guys can have to turn things around with this team. I'm telling you, if Harper has a big weekend, it changes the entire dynamic of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, you could be correct. Now, I don't view Harper as a big leader. I think you're right that he can lead from the plate, and he can be someone that if he has, I think it's, you know, maybe more than one game, but if he has a hot week, right, it really gets things going. But I think, to your point, the difference between these two teams might be the leadership. Like, Jalen, I think you can point to a few guys on that Eagles team. Lane Johnson, Jason Kelce in past years. I know he wasn't there last year. But Jalen, you know, these guys, like, I think they're leaders. I think when I look at the Phillies, I only really see one leader, and that's Kyle Schwarber. I don't know if guys like Trey Turner, Nick Castellanos, are they really true positives in the locker room? They can be when things are going well. Like, we've all seen the celebrations after they win playoff series. But it doesn't feel like when things are going poorly, this team is great at pulling themselves out of it. And I think that could be, A, because of the lack of leadership, but also, to bring it back to Topper, he is not somebody that looks like a rally-the-troops kind of guy with his emotion. It seems like he mostly lets guys work through it, which is a positive part to that, but I think there can be a negative as well. So I just see better leadership on the Eagles than I do the Phillies.
I agree with you. No, I agree with you on the Bryce thing. He's one of the guys where he just does it by his play, but I don't know if
he's had
the
bad
locker
body language. He's had bad body language all year. Like he has seemed pretty miserable all year to me.
I think he's defeated, Elliot, because he knows that he's hurting. Like, I think he's trying to battle through this and look like, you know, the hero and play through it and be this awesome player. But I think he's realizing real quick that it's not going to work the way that he wants to push through this pain.
And it's not, you know, I know comparing him to Joel is not something that people will like. And I think Joel is further down the road of his career coming to an end. I think there are similarities where when you see a great player who can't be himself because of his injuries, that is a very hard thing to deal with. And Bryce has now been dealing with injuries for a while. So with Joel, you see that bad body language. And I think you're starting to see it with Bryce.
I can't use those two names again.
Al.
I just can't.
Elliot, I just gave you praise about being a baseballsman, and this one hurts.
I mean, what's the difference? Like, Bryce does have Bedlam at the bank, obviously. That's a big part of it. But outside of that, Joel has an MVP. I mean, Joel makes the playoffs, and they're both guys that ultimately now are dealing with injuries all the time and are probably not the player they used to be.
Well, a big difference is when you have a huge building filled with people rooting for him to get through it. I think people are dismissing how energetic this whole building can be, this whole franchise can be. I mean, this place is packed still every night, and I know there's a lot of criticism from people like us that look deeper into the team, but I think when you look at the Sixers, people expect failure. I don't think that's the situation with the Phillies or with Harper. I think that place is, every time he comes to the plate, thinks he's going to hit a home run still.
So
that's a big difference.
I would agree to an extent, but I think that's changing. Like, when the Sixers first started making the playoffs, now I know it was coming off the process. There's always that group of people. But for the most part, people were encouraged by the Sixers on the way up. But we're comparing two teams at kind of different phases. But also, this idea that Citizens Bank Park is some fortress isn't really true. I mean, haven't they lost, is it four of the last five there in the playoffs or something like that? And I think the flip side of it is, while you're right, when that place is going well and people are hitting home runs, it can completely swallow up the other team. But we also saw when this lineup does what it does, which is go cold, go four innings without a hit, when it, you know, whatever, it gets extremely, extremely tense there. So I think that in 2022, that's what the ballpark was. But after 2 years of failure, I think the ballpark they're going to walk into in the postseason is going to be much more tense than it has been in past years.
He's probably right with that, unfortunately. I guess we'll end on that note, because God forbid we'd say something else and it turns into Bobby Clark is
man, I had a bone
Tobias
to pick
Harris.
Brody,
what'd
I
do?
Had a bone to pick. Yeah, so
what'd I do?
So, look, me and you, I would say, are on similar pages with the Sixers. We're both still somewhat defending Joel.
Yes.
But yesterday, when you compared the Sixers losing to the Celtics, when they absolutely quit in Game 7, to the Sixers losing to the Lakers in 0-1, I just think those are completely different things. I do agree with you to an extent that sometimes if a team loses, we're just like, oh, they didn't try or whatever. Like, you can't always say that. But that team against the Celtics absolutely quit in Boston on that day. And the
I brought up Game 6.
Well, I think down the stretch, Joel didn't go get the ball.
Well, didn't go get the ball. We had wide open looks, Elliot. You create plays for wide open looks for DeAnthony Melton, who's going 0-for-6 from the field on open looks. You got to be able to make your shots.
Yeah, Melton shouldn't be shooting the ball.
Well, that's a Doc Rivers problem.
No, that's not a Doc Rivers problem. That's a Joel problem. They're not running the Doc Rivers offense. Joel's supposed to go get the ball.
You're getting wide open looks in the NBA playoffs. Wide open looks. That's the job.
But it's Melton. You want
the MVP. He's one of the guys that's playing almost 30 minutes a night in the playoffs because that's your roster.
Right, but Joel's the one that should go get the ball. So I think the difference is Joel goes through stretches where it looks like he checks out. I don't think the 0-1 Sixers ever checked out. They didn't win, but I don't think they checked out.
No, I've never been wrong about basketball in my life, Ellie.
Well, sounds like you're not now either. So I guess
that's right. Elliot, thank you so much, man. I appreciate
it. Yep. Sounds good. Talk to you guys.
The best of interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.